Hey, everybody, welcome to Game of Thrones with Jay, Jack, and Nick. My name is Jay.
I'm Nick.
And I'm O'Gilly.
And welcome to the show. How's it going, guys?
Good.
If it was Married Man, I would have done it a little differently, but, you know, use your imagination.
Yes, yes. I get what you're throwing down.
Yeah. I debated on how to do it. I said, well, this is a PG show, so I'm not going to go too much into it.
So we come off what was probably one of the more controversial episodes in the history of the show. Caused a lot of uproar. And this one, not too much controversial things. But not much uplifting either.
Well, thank God they didn't have another rape scene.
They did have a rape scene.
Well, I guess
it's just unsuccessful.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Because that's the only controversy I've read about it is about that scene. They're like, oh my God, we just finished one rape to go to another rape. So it's like, ugh.
But they've had several in this show, haven't they?
Yeah. I mean, you can say that Drogo raped Khaleesi in season one. You know, There's lots of them, so. I don't know.
It shows a little rapey at times.
Yeah.
Anywho. A lot of stuff happening in this episode, a lot of action and drama unfolding on the screen, and somebody playing a little too loosey-goosey has come back to bite her, finally, as it seems. Do you want to get into this episode, the seventh episode?
Nah, I'm good.
The Gift.
Let's just get straight to the book segment.
That's the only reason why we're here, right?
Right.
All right. Well, let's head on down to the Men of the Night's Watch at the Castle Black.
Okay. Yeah, we see John preparing and these men preparing the horses, ready to go to north of the wall to Hardhome, which is where the remaining wildlings are camped out, thinking that they're safe. John walks over to Sir Alistair Thorne, who's now the first knight of the watch, and places him in charge of everything until he returns. To which Thorne replies, "I think this mission is reckless, full-hearted, and an insult to all the brothers who have died fighting these wildlings." Because clearly John is definitely the minority still. Like, no one approves of anything he's doing. But, you know, John just kind of just ignores him and says, thanks for your honesty, and then walks away.
It's about being Lord Commander. You do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Well, I think he believes – obviously, they have to have – you can look at the dwindling numbers. Something's got to give.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just logic, you know, strategic-wise.
Yeah, I mean, I think John should have done a little bit better job trying to sell this, but because he is making the right decision, but just no one – I can see it, too. It's kind of like we were talking about a few episodes ago, like – you know, if you were, this is World War II and you're fighting the Japanese, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, we're going to be friends with them now and invite them in and feed them and everything else, you'd probably be a little bitter about it too.
Yeah, so, I agree.
Yes. Yeah. But he walks over to.
Oh, have you seen that video someone posted about Coldplay and the.
Yeah.
Now, when you said wildlings, all I could think of was a song.
Wildling.
Doom, 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 doom. Anyway, I'm sorry to get off topic, but when you said that, the whole thing in my head was I was playing the song in my head. But go ahead.
But you know, going to that video, I do like how eager it even defends him. Like, he's like, you're a bit flat. No, he wasn't. But he walks over to John and to Sam. John walks over to Sam and they give a nice hug and a bid farewell. And Sam gives him a whole bag full of Dragon Glass points. So it was just a good idea because that's the only thing that kills White Walkers. So he's like, I hope you don't have to use them. But it's a good little nice gesture for Sam to say, take care, friends.
Well, Sam's a good guy.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Plus, I mean, he could come in handy. You never know.
You never know.
It's one of those, you know, foreshadowing things, maybe.
Yeah. Probably. Most likely.
It's one of my favorite things from, I think, the first Wayne's – is the first or the second Wayne's World movie where the guys at the beginning of the movie are, like, walking around with a big pane of glass across the street.
It's the second one.
To move around the chickens and stuff like that. Just like,
what are you doing? Yeah. What are you doing here? I don't know. All our job is to make sure these watermelons are still in this truck. You know, exactly.
But yeah, so maybe something will happen. And then we have Sam and
Spoiler
Gilly,
alert.
Sam Jeez. And Gilly, who are looking over Master Aemon, whose old age seems to finally be coming to him.
Yeah. And yeah. This scene and then the next scene is a bit touching. But yeah, he's having fun with Gilly's baby Sam and calling him Egg, remembering his little brother when he was a baby. And then finally he kind of just comes to his senses and says, you know, get that baby south, get him to safety before it's too late. Mm-hmm. And then that scene ends.
Winter is coming. Then we go to good old Reek, trustworthy Reek. You can put your faith in him, Reek. Brings food to a bruised and battered Sansa.
Yeah, that had to tick people off.
Yeah, I'm glad that you caught that, though, because you kind of didn't notice the bruises until she stood up. And you're like, oh, wow, look at all the bruises on her arms and back.
I saw it when she was laying down.
Yeah, same here.
Oh, okay.
Not that I'm an expert, but I he's beating the crap out of her.
Yeah. But yeah, she gets up very frightful, and she does a pretty good job of acting. You know, it's like, you know, I need your help. And, of course, then Reek is just shaking, like, no, you're his wife now. You have to do what he says or he'll hurt you. To which Sansa's like, you know, no, like he hurts me every night and it can't get worse. And of course, oh yeah, it can get worse.
It can always get worse.
Yeah. But yeah, and then that's when you see it, though, like her stand up and you see the bruise. At least I saw the bruises then, you know, and you can see where he's basically locking her in a room every day and raping her every night. So not very much of a happy marriage going on here.
No.
But, no. You know, but she calls him Theon, though, so she's trying to at least play.
Yeah.
She says, you're Theon Greyjoy. Yeah. I thought it was getting through to him.
I think it did a little bit, and he probably would have put the candle in the window if Ramsay hadn't have been at the top of that tower. So, but, yeah, you see that she tells that, though, like, Theon, I have friends here. They can rescue me. I would have thought she would have said rescue us, but she says, you know, they're going to come rescue me. Of course, to which he said, my name is Reek, you know, and she says, no, you were Theon. She's trying to instill, yeah, like who he is back into him to bring him back to being a human and promise her, and, you know, says, here's the candle. Please go put it at the top of the tower, which he says he'll do it, you know. But, yeah, he opens the door to find Ramsay there at the top of the tower, which
so Ramsay's at the top of the tower or was it a different tower? I don't know if it was like a little bait and switch thing or something.
That's a good question. I'll have to go back and watch it again. I assumed he went into the broken tower. I didn't think he just automatically went and ratted her out.
Yeah, the way he stopped and looked, I assumed he was in the tower he was supposed to put the candle in.
Yeah.
Because the way he looked, it was like he was shocked that he was there.
Yeah.
Okay, I assumed it was like a bait and switch, like the cameras and everything making you think he's going up that tower, but he actually ended up going to whatever tower that Ramsay was in. But that we can leave it to debate and give us a call at 206-392-311.
Call me Todd.
That's your opinion. But yes.
Right.
We go back to Aemon, who is kind of on his quote-unquote deathbed. There we go. Hey, it's a deathbed. We finally see one.
Yeah.
And he has memories of his brother Egg.
Yes. He's calling out for Egg, and Gilly's trying to tell Sam to go get some rest because most likely he's going to be speaking over his funeral the next day. And Sam doesn't want to believe it, but he says, no, I'm not going to leave. This man's been good to me. He's always been there for me. I want to be here for him now. And then Aemon screams out, Egg, you know, and then I dreamed I was old, which is actually a direct quote from the book as well. Just because he's kind of, I guess he's dying. He's reliving his life again. So he's just kind of like, I'm old. Which he is old. He's over 100 years old.
Yep.
But, and then the next thing we see is Aemon's funeral pile and Sam speaking about his life, that he was a Targaryen, he came from King's Landing, and that his watch is now over.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, now, correct me if I'm wrong, but at least I have read and saw the, like, the little about this episode on HBO. This is the first non-violent death we've seen of a major character.
I haven't even thought about that, but
really?
that's probably true.
Yeah, like every other death has been by some type of violent death of some sort.
Yeah.
He's the first one to die of old age.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm trying to think. Yeah, because like the first thing you see is a death, which you see
Ned.
No, not Ned. I'm talking about
I'm saying Ned chopping that guy's head off, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm thinking of the Eerie. Lord Aaron was laying there with the stones on his eyes at the very beginning of episode one, which he was poisoned, which you find out later he was poisoned. But
yeah.
Sir Alistair Thorne, then after Master Aemon's body is on fire, he just kind of creepily whispers to Sam that you're losing all your friends. You know, so it's not looking good for people who are loyal to John at the wall right now.
Right.
Not at all. Then we go to Sansa, who walks around Winterfell and meets up with her dear husband, Ramsay.
Yeah, I kind of wondered how she got out of her room if she's been locked up every day.
Well, they probably somebody probably, you know, unlocked it and said.
Probably Theon.
Mm.
All right.
Oh yeah, I'm sure he probably just summoned for her to be there.
Yeah, they just didn't show it.
Didn't show it. No. But yeah, she comes over to Ramsay, and Ramsay kind of gives her a creepy smile at first, and then he, but he actually has a one kind sentence, I guess, for Ramsay. Uh-huh. He says like, "I thought you were gonna be fat when I was promised you, but you're quite lovely." And you know, you make me very happy. And so, you know, but she's just terrified to death. But then he moves on to strategy and tells her about Stannis' army moving south. But now that a winter storm has arrived, it's actually quite lucky for them because their men are used to fighting in the snow, where Stannis' men are, you know, southern men are used to fighting on grass, good weather, leaner, faster horses, not the the north stock type strategy of fighting. Then he moves on to say that I'll be warden of the north soon, and you'll be my wardeness of the north. To which Sansa shows actually a little bit of spying, and I don't know why she is risking this of actually making him mad. But she's like, you know, but your stepmother's pregnant now, and if she has a boy, wouldn't he be the heir? And you can see it in his face. She automatically makes him mad, you know, by saying you're a bastard.
No. But at this point, she doesn't know that Theon wasn't able to put the candle in the window.
That's correct. That's true.
So that's probably why she was a little cockier, because she figured she was going to be saved.
Yeah.
I'm just guessing.
That's good insight. Yeah.
No, that's what I'm here for.
Yeah. Okay. But, you know, he does argue. He's like, I've been legitimized. Which Sansa against again goes, by another bastard. So she's kind of pouring the salt on that wound, just like, oh my God, you know. But then he informs her, well, you know, bastards can rise high. Look at your brother John now being the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch, to which she didn't know that. So, right. But Sansa was never close to John the way Arya was, so I don't know if she even really cares about John, what he does with his life. But then we get to the creepy scene here where he strolls her out and shows her the body of the old lady who was trying to help her with the candle and everything. And that he flayed her from toes to all the way to her head before she died. So it's just, I can't imagine seeing that.
Well, she died. She had a heart attack before she told anything.
Right.
Her heart gave out before she was a tough old woman, because her heart gave out before she gave up any information.
Yeah. Said, so, but they do breed them tough in the north. It's, you know, but it's like, you just see the fear in Sansa's face right there of like all of her hopes for escape just crushed and just shaking in the snow. And then, of course, Ramsay's like, oh, you're cold. You better get back inside now, you know. And she's lost for any kind of hope.
Yep. But there is, and I can't remember if it was in this Arthur scene or not, but. Brienne is still looking and trying to wait for the
candle. It was this scene.
Yeah, it was this scene. It was just like a little half a second where you see Brienne on the outskirts of Winterfell just overlooking the town. But I'm not sure if Brienne knows about the candle or not. I guess that could be the message that...
It seems like she was looking at that tower. I don't, it's what it seemed like.
That's what I assumed. I mean, because she was, I think like Jay was saying, she was looking at the tower.
Mm-hmm.
Just guessing. Because why wouldn't she, if she wasn't waiting for a signal, why wouldn't she go in already?
True. That makes sense, though. Yeah, like, I guess she told the innkeeper that the candle was the message and that he got it to the old lady, so yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
They just didn't do a too good job of setting that up.
Then we go to good old Stannis' men, who are camped out in the cold, cold winter weather coming down. And Davos suggests to go back to Castle Black and shack up for the winter, to which Stannis has no time for.
No. Yeah, Davos is he's basically giving him the bleak news. Like, the horses are dying, we're running out of food, men are starting to desert. Yeah, we have to go back. And we can't go back! Stannis, yeah, he refuses. He's like, I'm not going to retreat again, because then I'll be known as that king who retreated all the time.
We also said, too, winter could last 2 years, right?
It can last forever. The seasons in this world are very strange, because I think the last summer had lasted 7 years. And so there's
I
no
think,
telling.
I think he said something about lasting 2 years, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought.
It could. Yeah, you never know.
You never know.
Because even Ned tells that to Bran, like, I think in season one, that you were born in the first year of summer and you've never experienced a winter. So, I mean, and Bran was, what, 10 in season one? So, you know, that's how crazy the seasons can be.
Was he born in San Diego?
It's very possible, yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
But, see here. So, yeah, he basically is double downing on his strategy, like, we either march to victory or march to death.
Which, well, he should have waited before he knew winter was coming anyway.
Yeah.
It was a bad move on his part.
Well, you can blame Melisandre for that. Yeah.
Well, blame them both.
But, yeah, Melisandre has a suggestion of her own to help assure victory in the snow, to which Stannis does not like.
Yeah, and I really hope nothing happens like this, and it's going to really bum me out if it does. But, yeah, like, she says, I've seen the victory in the flames. You've seen it yourself. You're going to win in Winterfell. He goes, but sometimes sacrifices must be made to ensure this victory, and that King's Blood is the power to this, and that your daughter has the power to ensure your victory. Which, I mean, that just would – I think, I mean, just to kill a little girl just to get a victory, that would really just be sick.
I think it happens, because I think that's the only reason why she's there.
Maybe. Or something. But it's just – I don't know if I would like that.
But I've been wondering the whole time, why have they brought her in here? Why did they – you know, why did they – you know, they had that scene with him a couple weeks ago where he's, you know, he told her a story about her and he actually showed he cared about her. And now it's like, I mean, because before that, you wouldn't have thought he cared about her.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe this is making the viewer think, God, would he do it?
Yeah.
I think he would.
Well, he seems pretty much against it.
For now.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm kind of with Nick on this one. That'd be pretty horrible.
I hope they don't do it.
And then we go to
not like the kids from Blue Bloods.
If the the showrunners of Game of Thrones learned anything from last week, is that hey, let's try to have another rape scene.
Yeah.
But Gilly is harassed by members of the Night's Watch.
Yeah, she's confronted by two brothers who aren't sure if she's attractive because she's attractive or if she because she's the only girl at the wall. Yeah.
What a compliment!
What a compliment! Yeah, and but you know Sam. Though walks in and puts up a good front, tries to be brave, but he just is not a swordsman or a fighter, and quickly gets knocked to the ground and kicked and beat in the face pretty severely.
I was wondering if he was going to die.
Yeah, you kind of wonder that, because you're hearing like the bones crunch, and you're wondering if what got broken.
It looked bad to me.
Yeah. But he does, to his credit, he stands back up and calls their bluff, saying, you know, I did kill a White Walker. I killed a Thin. You know, I'll take my chances with you. But good old Ghost, who I had actually forgotten about on the show because I haven't shown him in forever, comes in to save the day and growls and scares off the two guys. And then Sam passes out on the ground. So.
I'm like you. I forgot all about Ghost. I go, oh, Ghost.
Yeah, because he's one of my favorite. I love anything with direwolves, and they've kind of. I'm not sure if it's just kind of a CGI budgeting thing, but they haven't shown him much at all.
Not real.
Yeah.
just ruined it for me.
Aww.
Aww. Oh man. Bummer.
Yes.
I'm done. I'm out of here.
But then there's a little nerd love, Sam and Gilly.
Nerd love.
Gilly, yeah, she's tending to his cuts. And then Gilly says, don't do that again because they would have killed you. You're not a fighter, you know. And she's trying to reassure him. She's like, because if something happens to me, promise me you'll take care of my little Sam. And, of course, he's like, yeah, I'll always take care of Sam and you too, to where it's like, you know, cue the 70s music and just, you know.
But good for Sam.
Good for Sam. Am I hurting you? No. Every rib in my body is broken. My face is broken. But no, this is a good deal. this is worth it.
Listen, after all that, if there's anything that'll help him feel better, it'd be that. So
yeah.
At least he's got that going for him. And then we got the sale of Tyrion and Jorah.
Yeah, which is really strange. I mean, they're outside the city limits of Meereen because you can see the pyramids in the background. So, yeah, the Jorah is quickly sold off as a fighter, saying that he slaughtered, which I thought was, you know, he lies. He slaughtered Drogo in single combat, you know.
Right.
But the guy apparently paid handsomely for him, and Tyrion thinks very cleverly to get himself sold to the same buyer by saying he's a fighter too, which, you know, of course everyone laughs, but then he kicks the crap out of that guy.
Oh, he smacked him, bro. It was great.
Yeah. But yeah, the guy still doesn't believe he's a good fighter. He goes, okay, I'll buy him. He's funny.
But yeah, so Tyrion plays a good move, and we'll see how that plays out a little bit later in this episode.
Well, I like how he talks to the slave owner. The slave owner smacks him in the face.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
What do you say? Yeah. Stick being funny or something like that?
Well, it's kind of a clever way because, you know, you kind of think that, like, Dany's outlawed slavery and slaves can't fight in the fighting pit, so you have to free me and pay me. So he just goes, you know, here's your coin. This is your entire wages for the rest of your life. Good luck. So, oh, well, that's a loophole, I guess. So.
There's always a loophole.
Yeah. Daenerys and Dario sharing a little bit of power
chicken. Wow. Yeah. I thought she was intended for someone else.
She is. And it's actually, this is an issue that I'm having with the show, because they are in the books having an affair because, you know, she's lonely. But they've kind of haven't set it up, in my opinion, very well in the show, because it went from just them being advisor, advisee, kind of flirting to all of a sudden, wow, we're in bed together. At least that's the way I'm remembering it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he's jealous that she's getting married and says, you know, why are you doing this? And she says, 'cause I'm trying to unite the city from within, you know, because we can withstand an attack from the outside, but if we're fighting on the inside, it's not going to work. But, he, you know, he wants her to marry him. But she's like, I can't do that. You're nobody.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah. But then he gives her another piece of advice. They're like, you know, on the day of the great tournament, round up all of the masters and slaughter them all. So
not a bad idea.
It's actually a good plan, but you know, I don't think she would do it, but we'll see.
But if you do that, you're only going to create more masters. I mean, someone else will step up, right?
Oh yeah. I think so. Another, you know, there's always a power vacuum in anything.
Right.
Yeah. So,
And then he says, all rulers are either butchers or meat, in reply to Dany saying she's not a butcher. Then we go to Lady Tyrell and a great scene between her and the High Sparrow.
It was very witty. I liked it. Yeah, the Queen of Thorns is trying to find the High Sparrow, to which she finds him cleaning the floors. And she's, you know, and very bluntly, the scene, she's saying, you're only doing Cersei's dirty work. Why are you working for her? You know, which, because she thinks that he's got an angle like most men who want power. And he's like, no, I'm here to serve the gods, you know. And she's like, well, what are you going to do with my grandchildren? She goes, well, the father will judge them according to what the law requires, because they broke a sacred vow under oath, so they're going to be put on trial and punished. But then she kind of counters again, saying, if it's equality you want, I'll make sure that the starving people of King's Landing know that you're the reason that we stopped giving them food. But then he counters it again, saying, have you ever harvested a field or reaped the grain? You know, once the few, you're merely some of the few who have the power over us. But once the many stop fearing the few, we'll see what happens. So it's, yeah, I thought it was a very nice scene. So.
Yep. We then go to Tommen, who is really, really mad.
Really mad.
You know, he was on an episode, watching Ripper Street season 4. He was on an episode of season 4 Ripper Street. And I'm looking at, who is this kid? And I go, oh, that's what's his name. And he plays a little different character than he does on Game of Thrones. I'm going to spoil anyone. A little tougher, though.
Yeah, I thought he was channeling his best Hayden Christensen there. basically he's whining to his mother that he can't do anything to free his bride from prison.
I'm in love. Yeah. I'm the king.
He's my son. Cersei, of course, he wants to raise an army to go slaughter, which is kind of what he should do, really. But to slaughter the sparrows to take back the power, but Cersei lobbies for, no, let me go speak to the High Sparrow and see if I can go get her out, and because your happiness is all that means, you know, everything to me.
She almost seems sincere because she had tears in her eyes. It's almost like, okay, she does care about him. I guess she does want to make him happy. I almost believed it for her. I was almost believing.
Well, I think that is why she's doing it. She doesn't trust Marjorie. I mean, I think it's part of one consulting her power, but still protecting her kids.
Yeah.
But is Marjorie going to hurt him? No.
No.
Marjorie wants the power, so she's not going to do anything to hurt him.
But when she says, I would, you know, burn cities to the ground to make you happy, I'm pretty confident that's what she really means.
You know? I believe that part, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just saying about getting her out of prison. I almost believed it.
No.
She had me for a second.
You almost had me there.
You almost had me.
Then we go to Jaime, who meets with his niece, daughter, Marcella, and you just don't know anything about me.
Yeah.
I know something you don't know. Yes,
But yeah. She wants to stay in Dorne and get married, and because she's in love.
I'm in love. This is my home.
Typical. Go ahead.
She did make some good points, though. She was sent away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this was supposed to be her home. You know, she does. She has lived there probably longer there than she did in King's Landing, right?
No. It's probably about equal time.
Equal time, but she's lived the years that she remembers.
Right.
You know,
and she's probably 10 to 12 when she's sent away. And I'm not sure how old she's supposed to be on the show now, but I would say 16, 17.
Okay, so but she's lived the years that she would remember there, opposed to King's Landing. And, you know, if you send me away, I'm like, hey, I don't want to go back.
Yeah.
We then go to Bronn, who is using that wonderful singing voice in a cell, and the sand snakes are right next to him. And Nick, you called out very accurately last week about the little slash wound he got on his arm.
I was so mad. I was like, Nick's right.
Oh. Yeah. It just made sense. So I was like, it made sense for that to happen because they're Oberyn's kids who poisoned everything he did. So I was like, why wouldn't they poison theirs?
Yeah.
But
is it Tien or Tien? Tien?
Tien, yeah. Their names usually aren't that important because there's so many, but yeah,
she has Tyene. Yeah, she has a thing for Bronn, and as Bronn's dying because of it, she gives him the antidote.
Well, the way I interpreted this scene was more, you know, he's being a cocky guy, which he is, you know, and she gives him a compliment, and he insults her by saying, you know, you're not pretty. So, but she knows something that he doesn't know, that she's poisoned him. So she shows him her. I don't know. Her lady bits to increase his heart rate to get that poison going. You know, so that's why she keeps going like, "How's your arm now? How's your arm now? How's your head?"
Did she also do it to get him closer to the end of the jail cell so she could throw it to him?
That too, but you know,
I mean, I do get the heart rate going up because it did seem to work.
Yeah. But yeah, the poison finally affects him. He collapses, and then she makes him say, "You're the most beautiful woman in the world." Yeah, just to get the antidote.
She is pretty, though.
She is pretty.
For that.
Although she's only 19, so you kind of feel a little, at least I do, you're like, oh, wow, she's really young.
It's 19. It's not, you know, it's kind of, it's still illegal. Sure, you're an old man, but okay, it's not as bad. Anywho, Littlefinger, we go to him surveying the damage done to his once great, great brothel. Things were invented that would happen here. And he meets with the Queen of Thorns.
Yeah, it's a short but good scene, and she's basically kind of threatening him the same way she threatened the High Sparrow, that, you know, that our destinies are intertwined, especially her and Littlefinger, because they plotted to kill Joffrey.
Right.
So she's like, if my house falls, how long do you think I'll hesitate to make sure that you fall too? So Littlefinger basically says, I have information for you, just same as I had information for Cersei, and it's the same thing, a handsome young man. Which I'm assuming, because he gave up Loras, I guess, to Cersei to kind of say, like, hey, or no, the guy in his brothel, the handsome young man in his brothel that was sleeping with Loras, to imprison him. So she probably told her to say about Loras Tyrell. Lancel Lannister, to say, like, he's the other young man that can help turn the tables on Cersei. So.
Yep. So basically, Littlefinger's just, you know, sit back and watch these two great families self-destruct.
Right.
So then we go to Jorah and Tyrion, who are preparing for, or at least training for the fights.
Yeah, I'm assuming this was just like a preliminary fight before the main event of just like a weeding out of who are the best fighters to represent the best of the best in the big tournament.
Yeah, I think that's what they said. They actually said it.
Because I remember going like, is this like the main, I was watching it going, is this the main event? Because this is not a lot of people. Like, what's going on?
I watched Spartacus and there seemed to be a little more people in Rome.
Yeah.
The main events.
Yeah, it kind of felt like a little bit of gladiator type feel, you know, with the whole, like, the helmet, and I want him to pull it off and go, like, my name is Marcus Aurelius, father of him. they're fighting, and Jorah hears that the queen is in the audience, so he quickly runs out to the field to start fighting people because he knows if he can show himself that perhaps he'll get an audience with Dany. So he goes out and wins today very cleverly, too. He doesn't kill anybody. He just knocks them out or uses his skills to just disarm them.
Right.
And then he removes his helmet, to which Dany, still very bitter and mad at him, just says, remove him from my sight. But he says, he screams that I brought you a present. Enter Tyrion saying, yes, I'm a present. I am Tyrion Lannister. So.
Who?
Who? Yeah.
Yep, but their plan worked kind of ish.
Yeah,
it did.
So kudos to them. You know, thinking on their feet. But here's the thing: the whole grayscale thing, is it only transmittable if you touch the grayscale part? So can he touch anybody?
Yeah, I think it should. I think it has to be the grayscale parts.
Okay,
because it's not really. You know, like, he doesn't get it in the books. So it's another guy who gets it, and it's just you don't quite understand its origins because it's believed in the book that when you even to touch the water, that river that they were going down, if you just to touch the water, you could get it.
Okay.
So,
well, how long does it take to spread? Does it spread?
I'm assuming it takes years to spread.
Oh, years to spread. Okay, well, yeah. If it takes years, it's like...
Yeah.
I don't have to panic right away.
He's got some time.
I got some time. Like, you know, hey. He's in his 60s anyway. He's an older gentleman, right?
Yeah. So he might die an old man-ish.
Yeah, there you go.
So then we go to the closing out scenes of the episode with Cersei visiting Marjorie with yesterday's venison.
Yeah. Very smug. You're just kind of saying, oh, I ate it last night. Like, here's my leftovers for you. You know, like, ugh.
Yeah, I thought it might have been poison, too.
Oh, I don't think she'd go that far.
You don't think so?
No. But because all she really wants is just her to get out of the way.
Okay.
But Cersei goes to visit Margaery and says, "We're doing everything we can to get you out." You know, and of course, Margaery doesn't believe her for one bit. You know, it's like, "You're behind this. I know you are." And Cersei just keeps saying, you don't know what you're saying. You know, you're tired. I'm sure tomorrow when you'll come to your senses." And she's like, "I don't ever want to see you again." Yes. Just, you know, mother-in-law relationships are never easy.
They're tough.
Yeah. So, but Margaery eventually gets really mad and throws the venison at Cersei and tells her to get out. And then as Cersei walks away, you can see this little smug grin on her face, like, "I've got you where I want you."
Yep.
You
know?
To which she enters the High Sparrow's chambers now and inquires about Margaery and Loras's trial, like what's going to happen. And he says, you know, it'll be before seven High Septons, so seven judges to see if they're guilty or not. And then she says, "Well, what happens if they confess?" She's like, "Well, they'll still get punished, but it'll be more merciful." And so then she's still kind of thankful. She's like, "Oh, good." So either way, she's like, "They'll be punished." And so she's like, "You know, thank you for bringing justice for their crimes." But then the High Sparrow kind of slowly flips the table on her, you know, and is like, "You know, look at this where I'm at right now. It's very basic. And it's very plain room. Do you know who made it?" She's like, "No." And he's like, "Neither do I." He goes, "Because it's before the vanity of royalty and people with power built up everything." He goes, "It's amazing what can happen when you strip away the vanity." He goes, "The Tyrell family right now is being stripped of that. And so shall it be for all of us, the highborn and the lowborn. So what will I find when we strip away your vanity?" Which uh-oh. Enters. Yeah. Uh-oh. You're like, you can just see it coming. Yeah. Enters Lancel Lannister, and then Cersei sees him come in, and she knows now what's going to happen. So she tries
remember
to.
Remember me?
Yeah, remember me? Yeah, that little cousin guy that you were toying with? You
know, yes.
Who killed her husband for her and everything. Yeah, so yeah, they've got a lot of dirt on her. So Cersei tries to flee, but she's quickly taken prisoner, screaming, "I'm the queen," and thrown into a cell, the same kind that Margaery is being held in.
So,
again, kudos to Nick, who said very early on that it's probably unwise to allow these guys in power.
Because nobody has
they don't care.
Everyone has skeleton. Everyone has skeletons.
Well, not only that, but as we learned with Lady Tyrell, she's trying to find the angle on this guy, and there is no angle.
No. Yeah.
So you're playing with fire, and she just got burned.
Burned bad.
Real burn. Super burn.
Super burn.
But anywho, that's the close to the episode. I thought it was a very enjoyable episode, and we're getting close to that penultimate episode where everything happens.
Oh yeah, it's a good little setup episode, I think. Yeah,
I know some people aren't liking the season; they're getting tired of it, but I enjoyed it. I thought it was excellent.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, there it goes, and we don't have any calls this week, Priscilla. Sorry, was looking forward to call,
but you figure with the episode last week, somebody else would have called.
Yeah, I would have thought.
Well, that's all right, because now we get to go to probably my favorite part of the episode. What happens in the books stays in the books with Nick Dunn.
Is it your favorite part because you don't have to do anything?
I like knowing, you know, the little bit deeper history.
Yeah, I think it's the part that I just talked about.
All right, Nick, take it away.
Yeah. And if, you know, if you have any questions pop into your mind that you're just curious about, want me to answer, I'll answer them if I can. But, you know, non-spoilery stuff. So, because I don't always, I just kind of write down what I know for sure.
Sorry.
You know. But now that Master Aemon has died, I can kind of say what was going to happen with his character, because it doesn't matter. But, yeah, Master Aemon doesn't die at Castle Black in the books. He leaves early on. He goes to Braavos, because he wants to go back to Old Town where the Citadel is to kind of die there, I guess, or learn a few more things and try to help Dany is what he wants to do ultimately. Because that speech about, you know, the only Targaryen left in the world is a sad thing. He wants to go to try to aid her, but he's really just too old to do it. And on the ship, he takes a ship to Braavos, and he's on the ship, he's on the deck, and it rains, of course, and he gets pneumonia. And when he gets to Braavos, he does recover a little bit, but then he knows he's pressed for time, so he gets on another boat to Old Town, and that's where he passes away, you know, on the boat. But all of these fever dreams that he's having about Egg and things like that actually do happen. So it's just the location is different, but everything else is true to what really happened.
Okay.
So that's why, like, when people are like, how did he get this note? It's like, yeah, he didn't get the note at Castle Black. He got it in Braavos because he was hearing, because it's on Essos, it's that island. So nationally, news of what's going on with Daenerys is going to be on Essos way more than it would be in Westeros. So.
Gotcha.
Okay.
But again, it's probably just one of those things where time and, you know, didn't really work out for to do that part of the story.
Right. And budget. And yeah. So why get a, well, they have ships there, but anyway. But yeah, Jorah and Tyrion aren't actually sold as pit fighters in the books. They're actually sold as servants and entertainers to a really wealthy man who he has Tyrion be a performing dwarf kind of gesture-ish character. Because at back in book three, they hire two dwarves. Well, why am I forgetting his name? Joffrey. Joffrey hires two dwarves to joust to kind of humiliate Tyrion. Mm-hmm. And they're jousting on pigs. And he wants Tyrion to dress up as well and ride a pig and joust. Of course, Tyrion is not going to do it and insults him once again at his wedding. Why I'm telling you this is because one of the girls that was one of the jousting pig people is also sold into slavery with Tyrion. And so they are kind of fulfilling this role of pig jousters, entertainers. And that's why he's sold into slavery as an entertainer versus a fighter. But
I like this version better. I like the TV one better.
Okay. And also, Tyrion has not met Dany as of yet in the books. I mean, they're kind of at this point, but not actually face-to-face, you know, saying, oh, I'm, you know, Tyrion. Dario and Daenerys, like I said, in the books, it's a lot more obvious that they're sleeping together, but not really romantically. But at this point, as soon as Daenerys announces that she's engaged to Hizdahr, they are no longer a couple. Like they're actually Dario is actually very mad because he kind of was working that angle of like, hey, I want to marry you, and then I'll have power,
right?
And so it's, you know. You kind of hints at a little bit there that he's a little jealous, but it's more like no more in the book.
Huh.
Also in the books, I don't think they'll go back to it, but I'll talk about it. Like Marcella is successively kidnapped in the books by the Sand Snakes, and they're led by the other character. I told you there was a member of the Kingsguard that was sent instead of Jaime to rescue her. They're actually all fled. They all flee together. The Sand Snakes, the Kingsguard, and Dorne Martell's daughter, who's not been introduced in the show. But then they're actually their plan still fails ultimately, and they are led back. So it's still on the same as the show, but it's just a different way of getting to the same point.
Huh.
And then, of course, in the book, Cersei isn't arrested because of Lancel's confession, even though I think it's much better in the show that he does confess because he actually has the dirt on them. But like I told you guys a couple episodes ago, Margaery was arrested because this guy confessed that she was having outer marital affairs with people in the castle.
Right.
And the church arrests that guy as well, who testifies that Margaery is having these affairs. And they torture him as well as they do Marjorie and everyone else. And he confesses that he lied the entire time that Cersei told him to say all these things. Okay. So that's why Cersei's arrested in the show. It's because, like, oh, you're a liar and you're paying someone to lie. Why would you do that? You know, so it's slightly different. So I'm kind of curious how the show is going to do it, because you know, they're actually what they're going to do with Marjorie now, because in the books it's all fabricated, whereas in this one she's actually did commit a crime. So, and then let's see, with Melisandre is still at the wall, so she in the book, so she doesn't actually advise Stannis to kill his daughter. So okay. I'm still kind of hoping that this doesn't come true, but we'll see. Like I said, like what you said, Jack, in the show, they're kind of hitting that nail pretty hard. So,
well, at least they're showing it's going to be a tough decision.
Yeah.
Because if it had been last season, I'd said, no, he would do it in a heartbeat. Doesn't care about her. But this season, you can see he actually cares about his daughter and the whole backstory we got, you know, a little bit. At least it's a tough decision.
Mm.
Yeah. For sure. For sure. Yeah. All right, well, that is it for this week's Game of Thrones with Jay, Jack, and Nick. You can give us a call at 206-309-211.
Yeah, you can call.
And you can also join our Facebook group, facebook.com/group/Jay and Jack group, for all of our TV show discussions, including Game of Thrones. All right, guys, we will see you next week for the 8th episode. Until then, hasta luego and goodbye.
Bye.